Hello, dear listeners, or listener, singular, possibly. Welcome to Quite a Good Sport, the very first episode. We are the podcast about sport for anyone who loves sport, anyone who hates sport, and anyone else in between. James, where do you stand?
I stand on loving sport until last night when England lost the Euros, and now I absolutely hate it.
By the time this goes out, no one's going to remember that, okay?
Oh, yeah.
I've forgotten it already.
Yeah, well, that was probably due to too much alcohol. I would say, are probably somewhere in between, apart from we wrote a book called A Load of Old Balls, A QI Book of Sport. And I think since writing that, I've got way, way more into sport, because what I found, and I think what we both found, is when you look at any sport, really, something that you see on TV, you don't really know what's going on. Suddenly, if you do a deep dive and try and get into it and try and understand it, almost every sport is incredibly interesting.
Absolutely.
So what are we going to do in this podcast, Anna?
We are going to introduce you to some sports. We are going to be talking about those sports ourselves, chucking in a few interesting facts that we've learned along the way. And we're going to be speaking to people who are experts, from Olympians to people behind the scenes. And then when we've picked up enough knowledge, we're going to take each other on in a great contest. So what are we talking about today?
Well, today we're going to talk about the great sport of rowing, and we're going to speak to some upcoming Olympian, hopefully champions from Team GB, and we will be trying our hand on the River Thames to see which of you and I is going to be the greatest rower.
Yes, and we had a great time researching rowing for this podcast and for the book. I was amazed by one rowing competitor called Lucy Strack, who was one of New Zealand's best rowers around the 2016 Olympics. She was going to go to the Olympics, going to absolutely nail it, and then overnight, she forgot how to row.
What? Oh, no.
Now, you play golf, James. This is a thing in golf, right? The yips.
When you forget how to play. Oh, the yips. I see.
Yeah.
So the yips is kind of where, let's say I have to hit a really short putt. So I've got the ball is only 3 feet away from the hole. Usually I'd be able to knock that in 99 times out of 100. But all of a sudden, my brain just won't let me push the club through.
It's exactly that, yes. It's like you've completely crumbled into a million pieces and become incapable of anything. And this happens in sports, I think particularly sports where you're using a constant repetitive motion that's almost in your muscle memory. It's like your muscle memory gets lost. And that's what happened to this woman, Lucy Strack. She was fantastic. She'd won multiple medals previously in various competitions. And suddenly, she forgot how to row. And she said it was sort of only the left side of her body that seemed to be affected. But they tried everything. Nothing worked. And eventually, she gave up and now does Ironman instead.
What do you reckon would be the worst event and the worst moment in that event to suddenly forget how to do it?
I mean, it would be embarrassing in something like in the 100 metres. You sprint, 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 sprint for 50 metres, forget how to sprint, just stop dead. That's a weird look.
That is a weird look. Yeah. Okay, so we are going to try out some rowing later. But before we do that, I think I should try you out with a little quiz on some rowing lingo. Mm-hmm. So what do you think in rowing is the Cox box?
The Cox box. It's not the kind of special kind of Y fronts they have to wear under their rowing costumes, is it?
No, it isn't. You must know what the cox is, I guess. What does a cox do?
It just sits at the front of the boat and they shout instructions to the people with the actual oars.
Yes, so what will they need to do that job?
I believe they sometimes have a megaphone, but sometimes they have they just shout, and sometimes there are speakers rigged up all the way to the back of the boat, are they?
Absolutely. So the cox box is the microphone and sound system within the boat that they use to communicate with the crew.
Oh, so it's not an actual physical box. It's sort of like a sound box hanging around them, an invisible box.
What I imagine is, you know, like in old movies when there was someone in a big truck and they're going, 10-4, 10-4, I'm coming for the package or something, and they would have like a square microphone in their hand. I think it might be like that.
I have no idea. Well, I can picture the square microphone, but I've got no idea what you're doing with that bit of dialogue. be reminded out there, any producers of films, not to employ James as a script writer.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that is a real memory of something like Smokey and the Bandit or whether I'm just completely making it up. Okay, here's another one for you. What would a rower do with an all-in-one?
Is this a cheeky pun, and it's actually an awl in one. And it's an awl, but it also doubles up as a walking stick and as a spear and as a knife and fork.
No, it isn't. We have been rowing by the time we record this. By the magic of audio, it will seem like we're going away from our microphones and going straight to the boats, but we have actually already recorded the race on the Thames. But do you remember the size of the oars, Anna?
Yeah, they were long.
And can you imagine using them as a knife and fork?
No, well, they could be used as a knife and fork in that what I think is a Christian story of the difference between heaven and hell, which is that in hell... stick with me, James. This is relevant. This is relevant. You know, in hell, you have this amazing feast laid out. Everyone wants to eat it, but you've only got giant knives and forks. So you can't reach them around to fit in your mouth. And the difference is in heaven, you've got this amazing feast laid out and all this food everyone wants to eat, but you've only got giant knives and forks. What's the difference, James? The difference is the people in heaven, they share, and you feed someone else with your giant knife and they feed you. So to bring me back to my point... on the boat, I could feed you with my oar, you could feed me with your oar, and we're both well fed on the water.
Another very relatable anecdote to go with my 1980s truck movie reference. But no, an all-in-one is actually, this phrase is used outside of rowing, I suppose. It's the lycra that you wear. It's called your all-in-one.
I see. Is that because I can't help but remember in this future rowing race we're going to do, I was wearing what I thought was a perfectly ordinary cardigan. And our instructor on the water told me that I was the first person ever to take to the water in a cardigan. What's that about?
It's really interesting because the kind of people who row, I would have thought the crossover between rowers and cardigan wearers might be actually quite high.
Absolutely. I mean, cardigans, waistcoats, those funny jumpers that don't have any sleeves. But yeah, I got some. I really went home with a bit of an identity crisis thinking, what's wrong with cardigans?
Okay, here's another one for you. Catching a crab. Do you know what that is?
Catching a crab. I know what the individual words mean. I think I remember that it has a different relevance to rowing, though, which can involve you flipping out of the boat.
Yeah, pretty much. So you lose control of your oar and it kind of doesn't come out of the water properly and it acts as a brake and it can whack you in the body or, I believe, throw you out of the water.
Yes. Stay tuned to find out if either one of us got hurled out of the water by catching a crab.
And finally, what is a rigger jigger?
A rigger jigger, it's a bit like when they get down and dirty in the boat after the race, isn't it?
Oh, they don't do that, do they? We've been in that boat. There's not much space, is there, for getting down and dirty in those boats?
You've got to be creative. And you still have your feet strapped in, so it is particularly difficult.
The riggers are the bits attached to the outside of the boat that support the swivel and the pin. And the rigger jigger is a small double-ended spanner used for attaching and adjusting your rigger.
Is it?
So there you are, dear listener. If you're ever in the boat race, for some reason you listen to this episode and you think I'm going to give it a try and it turns out like Happy Gilmore, you're absolutely amazing at it and you're in the boat race, use that lingo and you will not seem out of place.
No, you won't. But anywhere else, you will definitely seem out of place. So do be careful.
So we are going to do our race along the Thames later in the episode. But before we did that, I decided to do a little bit of practicing. So I've been in the gym for the last couple of weeks, unbeknownst to you, perhaps, on the rowing machine.
No, James, I was going to say that have you been, you know, because you're looking really...
hench, as the kids say, yeah.
Yeah, really great. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say that quite yet. I don't look like Matthew Pinson or Steve Redgrave. But apart from the hair, perhaps. but I have been on the rowing machine a little bit because I didn't want to embarrass myself. And do you know when the rowing machine was invented?
No, when? Was it 19th? I feel like the Germans were really into gyms in the early 19th century. Didn't they invent lots of contraptions for people to exercise on? Was it to do with that?
Oh, you're so close. It's the 4th century BC.
Oh, God. Almost there.
It was an Athenian called Chabrias, who constructed some wooden devices on land to train his crewmen how to row when they got on an actual ship. Because, of course, back in the day, 4th century BC, everyone's rowing. You can't just shove someone straight in on a ship because they're not going to know how to do it.
No, really. As we learned, it's harder than it looks, guys.
It was pretty difficult. And so, actually, why don't we throw to that item right away? What you are about to hear is me and Anna at the Fulham Reach Boat Club learning how to row.
Or failing to learn. Take it away.
Okay, so here we are at the Fulham Reach Boat Club. Anna, what do you think?
Pretty nice boat club, pretty nice looking river, ignoring the fact that obviously the Thames is full of sewage. And let's get in these boats.
Alter, we got some hands to move one of those onto the water.
So I'm here with Andrew, who is going to be our cox today. The tide is out, so the water's nice and low. We can see lots of big boats. Which is the one we're going to be in, Andrew?
This one here that has the oars.
Not the one with the motor in it, no.
Not the one with the motor. Sadly, you're the motor.
We're here at Fulham Reach Boat Club. What can you tell us about it?
So we're 10 years old. We're very young as a boat club, but we have a very strong charitable focus. So we teach all of the school children around Hammersmith and Fulham, Kensington and Chelsea, any state school that has proximity to the river, they're allowed to choose rowing as a sport.
Wow.
And we have a really interesting program called Boats Not Bars, where we go into prisons. We teach prisoners how to row in the gym on the rowing machine.
Huh.
And then when they come out of prison, they come down here, we teach them how to row on the river. And it helps very much with the rehabilitation.
That's
and
great.
Keeping them away from prison and going back in, introducing them to a new sport and new people.
And how far do you think we're going to be able to row today, Anna and I, considering we've never done it before?
I think if we can get you each doing, say, 100 metres
okay.
in a time, certain time, then that's a good measure for, you know, how quickly you're able to move a boat. So Alt here is going to be sitting in the bow of the boat. The bow of the boat is the pointy end with a bumper on it.
Yeah.
That tells you which way the boat is going. The reason he's going to sit there is that gives him best control for navigating the boat. Alt, you're going to row us across, but just watch out for the sculler here.
So we are not assisting with the rowing currently.
So what we're going to do here today is we're going to learn how to row, and then Anna and I are in the same boat.
Yes.
So we're not going to race each other side by side, because that would just be...
It does feel like it would be a difficult prospect, doesn't it? Do we cut the boat in half?
But what we're going to do is we're going to race for a certain distance each.
Yeah.
One of us is going to row for that time and the other one is not going to row.
Right.
And we're both going to do about 100 metres and then we're going to do a time trial to see who has done the fastest 100 metres.
That sounds great.
While we're all in the same boat.
That sounds lovely.
And I will be deliberately trying to make it as slow as possible, sticking my oars in.
Oh, yeah, we're allowed to plunge the oar in when the other one's rowing.
I might intervene.
I see.
That's fair.
So, Andrew, can people, like, come here for a lesson and stuff and you guys
Absolutely,
will get them on the water?
Yeah, so we run adult and junior learn to row courses. Mm. So after about 10 lessons, they're able to do the basics of rowing and row one of these boats. I think the oldest member we've had here has been 70-something.
Cool. A lot of nice geese now. What kind of geese are these? Oh.
They're Anyone? Just common old garden geese, I think, Anna.
Come on, there's no such thing as that.
So we are next to the London Wetlands Centre.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And there's a lot of bird life there, so you will see some unusual birds.
Oh, cool.
We also see seals and eels.
Do you?
Seals and eels.
I've seen a dolphin once.
Very exciting. And there's the furniture Harrods Depository. Is that where Harrods dump all of their sofas?
Yeah, so...
It's a lovely building.
It used to be that this was a wharf for Harrods, and they would take between here and Chelsea all of their stock. The story I like mm-hmm. is that if you were a well-to-do lady, mm-hmm. you had your fur coat. Mm-hmm. And in the summer, when you didn't need your fur coat, you'd send it down here and they'd put it in a freezer to stop it getting eaten by moths.
Brilliant.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Why doesn't that service still exist for the people?
Isn't it amazing we're learning facts, even though we're in the middle of the Thames?
OK, so I'm going to get you to learn together, and then, of course, we will do your competitive time trial separately. So to start with, arms out straight, left hand on top of right. I want you to lean back slightly. You're going to feel a bit of tension in the core and on the top of your thighs. Now I want you to bring your hands towards your body. Now I want you to lean forwards, keep the knees down. Good, long, tall back, nice posture. Now you're going to slide forwards on the seat and the handles will separate and you bring your knees up and together. In this position, you're now going to go from feathered, which is a flat oar, to squared with a vertical oar. Now you're just going to lift your arms a little and let that oar drop into the water and float. Now you're going to gently push with your legs and hang on the oar handle and the boat will move that way. And then lean back, punch your elbows through and tap your hands down onto your thighs.
Onto your thighs?
Yes, so there you went a little far, you went past your thighs. That's okay, I didn't tell you quickly enough. Arms, body, slide, square, place, row. Okay, so I think you got the principles of it really quickly, which is great. Now we're going to work on a little bit of teamwork, a little bit of timing. Anna, you're sitting in the stroke seat. So you set the rhythm of the boat. The body movements that you do, everyone behind you should follow.
Great.
You're the leader.
Love that.
But with that, the responsibility is to be consistent, predictable, and observable. Everyone behind has to watch those movements and follow them.
I think Anna's the least predictable, consistent person I've ever met in my entire life, so...
That's probably fair, yeah.
OK, let's go for two rowing strokes, but with a little bit more length, reaching for that catch.
OK.
Go.
I've absolutely fucked that one.
That's interesting.
So just sort out the oar, get it feathered and flat.
We'll just do that again.
Let's start again. Two rowing strokes. Go.
I was stuck.
So what happened there, we would call that catching a crab.
Oh, I caught a crab!
That's so exciting. Why didn't you flip out of the boat?
Although there has been some discussion about catching crabs, and rowers have been asked to liberate lobsters instead of catch crabs.
Right.
But it's the same thing.
What's the thinking behind there? Is that unethical to catch crabs?
Correct.
Right, OK.
So we now liberate lobsters. Now I'm going to get you to continuously row.
Cool.
OK, so leaning back, hands to the body.
Andrew, can I just say, we've been going for about 25 minutes and we're still outside the Harrods Furniture Depository. Shouldn't we be in France by now?
Yeah, you can leave your passports behind. We're not getting to France.
I feel like I'm at a disadvantage for the rowing because you went to a posh school and I didn't go to a posh school. Did you do rowing at school? No.
It wasn't that posh, I'm afraid. No. It's posh enough. We did hockey, but not rowing. But, you know, hockey is still long sticks. I'm used to holding a long stick.
Well, let's not go into that. But, yeah, I really like the old rule at the Henley Regatta, which we talked about on Fish a while ago, which was that anyone who is a mechanic, artisan or labourer or a person engaged in any menial activity was not allowed to take part in the rowing competitions.
That's good. That's because they need to be at work doing their actual jobs that are needed. Posh people aren't needed in the working world, you see, James, which is why they're free to row. We wrote about some sort of glorious losers in the book that we recently wrote. So there was Eddie the Eagle.
Oh, yeah. There was Eric the Eel, of course, the swimmer.
Yes, Eddie the Eagle, Eric the Eel, and there's also Hamadou Djibou Issaka.
Oh.
Do you remember him at all from the 2012 Olympics?
I don't recall him. Is he presumably a rower?
He was a rower. So he was from Niger, which is a landlocked country, does not have much of a rowing tradition, but he qualified for the Olympic Games because there was that system which tried to elevate countries which wouldn't manage to get qualifying candidates by other means. And so he basically got into the Olympics despite having only started rowing, I think, a few months beforehand. He was quite a good swimmer. And so I think the thinking in Niger was, well, this guy can swim. He's good on the water. And he became a complete hero. I don't know if people remember him, but he finished in his first race at the Olympics in 2012 in 8 minutes and 25 seconds. And then every time he did it after that, he just got slower and slower. But as he got slower and slower, he got more and more popular. And he ended up being like the most popular competitor at the Games.
How interesting, because I know that the course at the Olympics is 2,000 metres and I decided to see how fast I could do 2,000 metres on a rowing machine. Mm-hmm. And I reckon my time was quite similar to what Hamadou's time is, that kind of 8.5 minute mark.
If only you'd qualified as well, you could have rowed together, a little bit of solidarity at the back.
I really like Ned Hanlon, who was an old rower. So he was a rower in the 1880s. And the best thing about him is that he was just so much the best in the world that he had to kind of keep things interesting by sometimes he would pretend to fall out of his boat, or he would pretend to lose his oars, or he would lose his oars and then he'd sort of splash around, go and get his oars back, and then the other person would overtake him. But then because he was so good, he could just overtake them again.
Is that, that feels quite insulting. That feels a little bit like that scene in Mary Poppins where she's on one of those carousel horses and she overtakes lots of professional jockeys and they're not happy about it, I just want to say. Isn't that a little bit of a slap in the face?
I suppose it is, because then there was another time where he won the race and then rode halfway back to the course to where his opponent was and then turned around and beat them again.
Well, exactly. This is the kind of thing I'm talking about. No one else finished the race because they all dropped their oars in the water in order to give him the finger, which is what I would do. One other quite interesting thing about rowing, if you're not particularly interested in the sport itself, you can focus on the things happening around it. So we were reading about a sound designer called Dennis Baxter. And the truth is, when you're watching a rowing race and you're hearing all that splashing and people shouting out or the creaking of the oars or whatever, you're not hearing any of that because the sound of the helicopter and the chase boat and everyone filming the race would have obscured any of those actual sounds. So when you're designing the sound for the races, you actually go, well, this is what some sound designers do. They go and sit in boats in the morning before the race and record the sound of themselves splashing the oar into the water and out of the water so that they can dub it on afterwards.
That's so funny. So actually the sound you're hearing is someone who's a rank amateur probably, who doesn't know how to row.
Definitely, yeah. I don't know why he goes to the river. He could just do it in his bath at home or something. Could just, you know, get a spoon, smash it into the bath.
Well, what is an oar apart from a really long spoon, Anna? Let's be honest.
So wise. Because I didn't realise they were so scoopy until we rowed ourselves, actually. They are like proper scoops, aren't they? They're concave.
Yeah, that's how you can catch a crab so much, right?
Indeed.
Once they get in there.
You can't shake that bloody crab out. Yeah.
Yeah, so just back to the sound, we're going to speak to Imogen Grant and Eve Stewart, who are two of our Team GB medal hopefuls for Paris. Imogen Grant is a world record holder in lightweight single sculls and lightweight double sculls, and Eve Stewart won silver medal at the 2024 European Rowing Championships. But they said to me that actually the sound of the boat, sometimes it just sort of, it's almost like purring, and you can tell that you're doing really well by the sound that it's making, which I think is really cool.
That is. I'm not sure how much purring I heard when we were on the water. A few sort of like yelping meow kind of sounds, but that is interesting. I have been looking a little bit at people who are professional rowers online, sort of exchanging tips and ways of conceiving of rowing and how to improve. And I really liked one thing someone said, I think it was on Reddit, which was to become aware that your oar is not moving when you're rowing, which is just an odd thought. I hadn't really thought about it. As you put your oar in the water, you shift your body forward and then you push your body back. And that pulls the oar, and you think you're pulling the oar through the water, but you're not, of course. The oar is staying still and you're pulling the boat. So it's just like if you're, I read a comparison, like it's like if you're lying on a skateboard and you push with your hands along the ground, your hands are staying still, but you're pushing the skateboard forward. When you put your oars in the water, they're mostly just still.
That's so interesting.
It's weird, isn't it?
I wish I'd have known that when we actually tried it, because I feel like most of the time I was trying to move the oars quite significantly and failing most of the time.
I mean, you definitely don't want to put the oars in the water and just sit still. That would be quite embarrassing. But yeah, they're just using that water resistance.
Okay, well, let's listen to my interview with Imogen and Eve. They spoke to me from their training camp in Italy, and let's see what they have to say about their chances in the upcoming Olympics in Paris. Okay, so I am here with Imogen Grant and Eve Stewart, who are two of the Team GB rowers for the upcoming Olympics. Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Hi. Good, thanks. How are you?
Very well. Thank you, Imogen. How's things?
Yeah, I think we're both a bit tired, but really excited to be on the podcast today.
Tired because you have been out partying last night like I have? Or
Unfortunately not. No, we tend to train two or three times a day. So you've got us on a half day, but that means we've done about what, 35 kilometres
of
rowing this morning?
Yeah, it's been a big day, before 1 p.m.
Oh, wow. So, Eve, where are you at the moment? Are you both in the same place?
Yeah, we're in a training camp in Italy, actually, in Varese, and we're both in the hotel.
Okay, cool. So, Imogen, you are, let me get this right, you are in the double sculls, is that right?
Yeah, I'm one of the lightweights, so I'm in the lightweight women's double scull. There's only three of us on the team, me, my doubles partner, and our reserve.
Am I right in saying that at the moment you're on a bit of an unbeaten streak?
Yeah, I think it's 10 regattas in a row. I might have that wrong. I sort of stopped counting, to be honest. But yeah, it's been a good Olympiad for us.
Yeah, and does that put more pressure on you or less pressure when we get to the actual Olympics, do you think?
Probably more pressure. We came fourth in Tokyo by a very narrow margin, but we were still quite unknown. Whereas coming into Paris, there's definitely expectation, but most of the time it's positive.
Yeah, I guess like expectation, a lot of it is what you put on yourselves.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure that we put on ourselves. The main thing that I want to do in Paris is do a good job, be proud of how we race. We talk about it a lot with our sports psychologists and people like that. There's things that you can control and things that you can't control. And we can't control how good everybody else is, but we can control exactly what we're doing on race day, during the race, across the finish line.
Yeah. And is it right that this is the last time this event is going to be in the Olympics?
Yeah, that's right. We're a bit of a dying breed, lightweights. So for LA, which is the next Olympics in 2028, there won't be any lightweight doubles.
I suppose one exciting thing is if you win the gold this year, you'll be a forever champion.
Yeah.
Because we always have this fact on QI, which is like the reigning tug of war champions is Great Britain. Maybe in 200 years' time, people will still be talking about you as the reigning lightweight skulls.
I'd like that.
Champions.
Sounds pretty nice, doesn't it? Reigning Olympic it champion.
So, Eve, you are in the even bigger team, right? You're in the eight, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
How did you get into rowing?
Yeah, I've had a bit of a roundabout way of getting here, actually, because I grew up in Amsterdam and was actually involved in the Dutch team from the age of sort of 17, 18 to 23, I think. I did Olympic trials for the Dutch team and everything, got injured and had to take a step back. I definitely always had this nagging, like, oh, I want to be on Team GB. But obviously, I was on an Olympic pathway already. So because I got injured, it created a perfect opportunity, really. So I hopped the pond and came and rowed in the UK for a summer and ended up loving it here so much that I decided to trial for GB, and it's all worked out quite well.
And the team are all cool with you being for the Netherlands in the past and coming over? And also, do you have some like rivalries in the Netherlands team from people who you used to race with? Or?
No, not at all, actually. I have really good friends still on the Dutch team. And what's really great is the Dutch don't actually have an eight at the Olympics. So all of my Dutch friends and the Dutch team are rooting for me, and I get congratulations messages every time, and seeing them at races this season has been really fun. So,
and were you always sporty as a kid?
Yeah, I think I did a lot of different things. I danced for a while and I did athletics for a few years.
Is it true that your mum played netball for Wales?
She did, yeah. Oh, she'll love you saying that.
Well, I read about her and she's very interesting. But then I started reading about your grandmother. And yeah. Oh, my goodness. I spent about half a day reading about her. She is incredible.
Yeah, she was quite the character. She passed away, unfortunately, in 2017. But we just had such a major presence in my life. Still does, to be honest, because I'm sat here talking about her now. So she was a tiller girl in post-war Britain, and one day after performing in Blackpool, a photographer came up to her, and it ended up turning into this sort of Marilyn Monroe moment of her spotted dress blowing up on the Blackpool pier. And the photo sort of, I mean, going viral wasn't really a thing in those days, but it was the equivalent, as it were.
Amazing. And Imogen, what about you starting rowing? I read that it started off with a couple of free drinks at Freshers Week. Is that true? Or?
That's right. I was only in it for the free drinks, and then things kind of
escalated.
Yes. I grew up in Cambridge, so I knew a bit about the boat race, but I thought rowing was a stupid sport. It's cold, it's wet, you have to get up really early, you get blisters on your hands and you can't see where you're going. But in Freshers Week at my college, back in the day, they had boaty cocktails one evening. The perfect way to try and lure some new recruits down to the boathouse to fill out your squads of rowers. And so me and my friends put our names down got our two, they were bright blue cocktails of some description. And I had no intention of going to the taster session, actually. But I think I had that nagging feeling of, oh, I'd had those free drinks, so in return, I'd better show up. So I chased them down and got in a boat that day. And once I got off the water, I put my name down for a session literally the very next day. So by the end of the 8 weeks, I was doing more rowing sessions than our top men's boat for our college.
Wow.
I ended up a bit of a nightmare because I kept emailing the people who organised the outings asking for more sessions, and they had to reply saying, sorry, there aren't any more. You're in all of them.
Eve, I was looking at your Instagram, and when you made it to Team GB, there was a photo of you with the seven other rowers and your coxswain, and you are all holding oars. And my question is, they were such enormous oars. Were they like big comedy oars, or are they actually the ones that you use? Because they were like three times your height.
I know, it's actually so strange seeing them out of context.
To put it in perspective, a sweep blade that Eve uses is nearly 4 meters long. And the boats are really long as well. I can't quite remember how long an eight is, but I think it's something like 18 meters. Which, when out of context, is really, it's huge.
Yeah, because you just watch it on TV and you can't really see the context, can you? You just see these long, thin things going along your TV screens. Are the Team GB boats any different to the other countries' boats? Or does everyone get the same boat when they turn up?
Rowing is maybe quite a unique sport in the sense that there are a few major brands that a lot of the top countries or nations will just go to. But from what I know of it, it's kind of what your money can buy. So there are limits so that nations with less money don't fall behind as much. But everyone's kind of, it's not like sailing where, you know, there's huge differences. Everyone's kind of rocking up to the start line with the same equipment. And all the boats also have to weigh the same amount. So no one's got any advantage in their boat being 10 kilo lighter and zipping down the course ahead of the rest of the field.
Does all of your eight people all have to have about the same weight? Because when I went kayaking with my wife once, she was in the front and I was in the back, and I got drenched and she couldn't even put her oars in the water because she was like in the air.
Yeah. When I was younger, people definitely said, oh, we'll put the lighter ones in the bow, you know, so that the boat isn't being exactly how you said. But sort of by chance, I think a lot of the open weight women on the team are give or take around the same weight anyway, because if you're 6 foot tall and you're training X times a week, you end up kind of looking the same.
Imogen, as well as the sport stuff that you do, you're quite vocal about the rivers in the UK and stuff like that. Can you tell us a little bit about why that's so important?
Yeah, I started a program called the Powered by Purpose program to actively help athlete activism. And as a rower, we spend 3-4 hours a day on the water every single day of the year. We see it at its best when it's beautiful blue skies and birds and wildflowers, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And we see it at its worst when it's windy and rainy and we can see sewage floating down it and dead fish in the middle of the lake. So I decided to become an ambassador for the Rivers Trust to help add my voice to the many campaigning for improving the health of our rivers. And for me, it's been massively fulfilling to see my role as an athlete, not just to try and excel at my sport, but also to advocate for a cause that I'm really passionate about.
Awesome. Eva, when you finish the Olympics, are you going to get a holiday or what?
It's a big topic of conversation going on this camp. It's quite strange going from living this extremely regimented life where you have a few hours a day to yourself, but they're not even really to yourself because you're in a hotel for a month, to just saying, okay, have fun, see ya. So as much as I want to do lots of things, I also want to relax a bit because, as you can probably imagine, this year has been mental.
Yeah, I can imagine. But Imogen, is it right that you're not going to have any relaxing afterwards? Or...
Yeah, that's right. I'm starting work as a foundation year doctor 3 days after the closing ceremony.
I did not know that.
Surprise.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, at least you get 2 days. Before we go, Anna and I, we are going to go down to the river and we're going to try our hands at rowing and see which of us is the best. And obviously, I don't really need any help because I'm obviously going to be the best at this.
Naturally.
naturally. But if I did need to get a couple of hints about how I can beat her, what can I do to try and beat her in this race?
This sounds really simple, but my number one tip is do not let go of your oars. Because so many people, you know, the boat starts to wobble and people put their hands in the air and they're like, oh no, then you do end up in the water.
Okay.
Hold on to your oars.
Hold on to your oars. That's a really good tip. Can you tell me, Imogen, anything that, you know, we do a podcast about facts. Is there anything about rowing that people at home just wouldn't know?
Yeah, well, I do have an interesting fact for you. There's been a study that shows that if you row on the rowing machine in time with people rather than out of time with people, so you're taking the strokes at the same time as them, you have a higher pain tolerance afterwards. And it might be one of the reasons that explains why rowers can go so hard in races, because we're able to withstand more pain because we train exactly in time with each other.
I read, Eve, I can't remember where I read it, that you said the shared pain that all of you go through when you're rowing is kind of builds friendships and stuff. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think putting yourself through a massive physical effort, it does just build relationships. You know, we finish a really hard session where people have ended up on the floor. Some might have shed a tear or two. Some might have thrown up. And you sit around the dinner table, you sit down for breakfast, and you definitely got a lot to talk about. And that just builds and builds and builds and builds over, you know, the hundreds of sessions that we do together. So 100%.
Awesome. Well, Eve, Imogen, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck in the Olympics. We'll be cheering you on, as of course all our listeners will be. Thanks again for coming.
Good luck.
Thank you.
So thank you to Imogen and Eve for speaking to me, and hopefully they'll be winning some gold medals for us. It'll be interesting to see how many of our athletes that we speak to in this podcast actually go on and win gold versus how many should win gold, and whether we help them to reach their goals or whether we hinder them and actually they all become terrible because they spoke to us.
Hang on, I'm not taking the blame. If Imogen and Eve sort of fall out of their boat within 10 metres and, you know, have to be rescued by a passing fish, I'm not taking any blame for the fact that you spoke to them.
Well, if I'm going to take responsibility for their goals, then I feel like I should take responsibility to the other side as well.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
So one more thing before we go into our big challenge, do we have one more story that we can tell people about rowing?
Well, I always like the story in the Berlin Olympics in 1936, where the starter, the guy or the girl who says, ready, steady, go, or mark, set, go, they had to have a megaphone. And there was one time where I think the main competitors were Germany and England. They were the two, they were two out ahead teams. And Germany clocked that it was possible to do false starts because that megaphone was too big for the starter to see around. So he had to sort of whip it away from his face really quickly and then spot. So you could just get a little false start. You could get that extra seconds head start before he could see you. And they used it, didn't they?
Yeah, you know what he should have had? He should have had one of those little square microphones that truckers have.
Bloody hell.
That would have been really useful. But if you look at the image of him with this huge megaphone, it's quite comical. It's like you've got the biggest piece of paper you can think of and turned it into a children's megaphone, isn't it? Into a cone.
Yeah, it does. It looks like a stupid comedy wizard hat.
Yes, exactly. For the wizard with the world's biggest head.
Exactly.
If that's possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, the really interesting thing about it is obviously 1936 Olympics, Berlin, the Nazis are running it. They're trying to show what a great country they are. They're trying to sport wash their way around the world. And they were really, really confident with this rowing team. The team was Willy Keidel and Joachim Pirsch. And they were huge favourites. And you could tell they were favourites because Hitler was going to all of their races. And he didn't turn up to the places where they weren't going to win. He only turned up if he knew they had a really good chance. And also the British team, who was really their only competitors, that was Dick Southwood and Jack Beresford. They'd had a specially built wooden boat made in Britain, which they were sure was going to absolutely kick the ass of everyone else. It was a very special boat, but it got mysteriously lost in transit. It had made it over the channel, but then once it arrived in Germany, it mysteriously disappeared and no one knew what had happened to it.
Why didn't they just row it over? Row your own boat. It's the one thing. You can always be aboard it when you're crossing the channel.
Yeah. So the Germans had found this trick that the guy with the megaphone couldn't see them. And so they could always start on ready, while everyone else was waiting for the steady and go. And so they managed to get all the way through to the final. And of course, Dick Southwood and Jack Beresford had also made it through because they were the second best team in the world.
And then I think in the actual final, the Brits also just went on ready. And then did they win gold in the end?
They did win the gold in the end. And Beresford said it was the sweetest race he ever rode because not only did they defeat the German team, but Adolf Hitler was seething from the stands in the despotic way that he does.
Oh, moustache twitching away. Yes, in his face. Nice to have been able to stick it to Adolf Hitler in 1936, isn't it?
It's a nice story.
It is a nice story. Okay, well, let's get back to the nicer story of the moment. Who is the eventual victor out of you and me?
So we're going to do the first of our two time trials. So you can see this yellow marker on the wall, Harrod's wall here. That gives you, it's actually telling you the headroom at Hammersmith Bridge. So we're ready to do our first time trial, which is from this yellow marker to the next red buoy. OK, all right. How are you feeling?
I don't feel very confident.
Me neither. But...
all right.
But genuinely, the water feels quite warm. So
whoa.
OK, we're ready to do the first time trial. So, James, ready, go.
Is it me?
Yep.
What are we doing? Oh, wow.
Go. We're off.
We're kind of getting there. My main problem is that I'm not really putting the oars in the water at the right time.
You're using that air resistance.
I'm not doing the clicks.
It's very relaxing. This is my favourite kind of thing on a boat, when you're sitting on it, looking around, and someone else is doing the rowing. Some lovely geese flying above. Oh, quite cold, uncomfortable looking producers over there.
And we're approaching the finish line, the red buoy.
1 minute and 18 seconds.
I'll be honest, I'm a bit disappointed.
Can you tap us round into the inshore and row us back up again?
Okay, so Alt has got us back to the starting line. Anna's about to do her run. I was very disappointed with my run. I felt like I was mostly just trying to keep us afloat.
Great.
But Anna was very impressive in her practice, so I feel like she's going to get this in the bag, but that's me really just putting pressure on her.
Yeah, James is working hard to put me off. If there's one thing we know about me, it's I don't perform well under pressure. I feel like we're passing the yellow bit now, though, right?
Okay,
there's
so
a nice
Anna,
little ladybird on my foot, which is
just getting ready to row, sitting at backstops, leaning back, hands to the body. Go.
This is a pretty steady start from Anna. She's going a little bit deep with her oars, but she's getting there. Now she's really getting her rhythm. We're actually going at a proper pace. This is a disaster. I'm really disappointed by how good Anna is at this. She hasn't messed up a single time. Even the motorboat with our producer on is struggling to keep up. She's going so fast.
Oh no! God damn it.
Approaching the finishing line, 4 or 5 more strokes.
You've got this by about 25 seconds, I reckon, Anna. Watch out for the honk. It's coming.
And well done. Good. Easy there.
Well done. Okay.
Anna, that was amazing.
1 minute and 1 second.
Well, I've got to say, Anna, you did absolutely smash it. I think you had the technique more than anything.
Yes.
We're coming in onto the bank of the Thames now, and we're going to get a nice cup of tea.
Oh, yeah. Cup of tea.
And explain what went wrong.
Pint of beer and a telling off.
Well, Anna, you won. What can I say?
Look, you don't need to say anything, James. You can just bow down to me and, you know, brush away the dust before my feet as I walk henceforth.
You know what? We did a practice run, didn't we? And I actually thought we were both nailing it. We were both doing really well. And then suddenly when the pressure came on, I don't know about you, but I completely... it was like that woman who forgot how to row, apart from I'm not convinced I ever really knew how to do it in the first place.
It was great fun. Can't recommend trying it enough. If anyone wants to try something new, get down to your nearest rowing club and get taught some rowing. And why not watch the rowing this year's Olympics?
Absolutely. And what can we say about next week? So we're going to be trying another sport. I'm going to be trying to get my own back on you. And I think what we should do is something that has a little bit less exertion. What about some table tennis?
Yeah, I'm up for that. That sounds like the kind of sport where I can pop a glass of wine on the corner of the table and have 2 feet rooted to the spot for 20 minutes. Let's do it.
Perfect. Okay, well, we will see you next week for our episode about table tennis. But in the meantime, I've been James Harkin.
I have been Anna Dushinsky, and you've been listening to Quite a Good Sport.
Quite a Good Sport was presented by James Harkin and Anna Tashinsky, with contributions from Andrew Doherty, Imogen Grant and Eve Stewart. It was produced by Molly Windust and James Harkin. The production team included Alex Bell, Adrian Bradley, Tara Durrell, Liang Lee and Natasha McQueen. Thanks go to Fulham Reach Boat Club and Team GB. This has been a quite interesting podcast.